something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT,
we dissect the good and bad about this year's AMAs.
We talk about bullies.
And your picks for the greasiest bars in Canada. All coming up right now on TNT. Jeremy Taggart, make some noise! That's my Pitbull at the AMAs.
That was Pitbull. Hey, how are you? He has to have a big hammer. I tweeted
what
that.
What is the deal? Did you see my AMA's drinking game? You call yourself an ambulance first.
Yeah.
Then you do a shot every time he says, make some noise. Then you wake up in the hospital the next day.
I saw one photo of him dancing, and it looked to me what was like, not unlike a fist, like where his penis should be.
A very big fist.
And I just that to me would kind of make sense with the whole thing with why he's popular.
There's not even a but about him. Like, yeah, he's kind of annoying, but there's nothing endearing redeeming or...
Women just can't get enough of the guy. And it's like, it's seemingly the more attractive you are, the more you like Pitbull. And I don't know why
it was jarring and unsettling seeing him without sunglasses on as the host of the thing. And he's trying to do bits.
People just weren't prepared for that, right?
He was trying to do comedy bits. Like, they said last year when I spoke Spanish, the numbers went up exponentially. So this year, I'm going to speak Spanish all the time. That was the joke, and that was the rhythm, and that was the cadence.
Nice.
Let's talk about the AMAs. First of all, like, why it exists, and who it's for, and what it means, and why. This was the show that Dick Clark created, right?
Yes.
It doesn't have legitimacy of the Grammys.
Who Aretha Franklin called Dick Cock, right?
When?
Did you hear that? By mistake?
Last night?
Yeah, she apparently
slipped
it up.
Well,
yikes.
Diana Ross seemed unsure of where she was.
Diana Ross did the
Dick Clark Award for Taylor Swift.
Maybe it was Diana Ross. I was actually watching it from Twitter and clicking back and forth like because it was so offensive.
Man.
But I clicked at one point over, and there was like One Direction and like a field with like a moon behind them.
Do you know?
Like real and like fake grass. I'm like, really?
Oh, technically.
What is this? Grade 11?
Technically, Peter Pan? It was unbelievable, though. Like the aesthetic and the technology to change screens and things like that, that is mind-boggling. But do you know, there's a very simple way to describe what age I'm at now. I know the artists that are the, remember? Nostalgic pairings.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Right? It's like so-and-so and Wyclef Jean. I'm like, remember Wyclef? I know that reference. But most of the kids, I don't even know.
Yeah, that's the thing that frightens me the most. It's like I feel that it's just, when you see, if you look at Hollywood, you know, the old actors and the old writers and how learned they were and how many books you had to read and things that you had to do to get on screen. And then, you know, that kind of bar has slowly lowered. And you still have talent nowadays. It's there. But what's in the mainstream and what people see every day is it's more the posturing and the marketing and the interesting creativity. So it's just these executive-type decisions as opposed to artist, performer, musician, art, you know, playing and having that be what's exciting. It's just not there at all. It's the complete opposite. There's no music really at all. It's more just about a production and creativity and marketing in a way.
So who's at the top of your I don't get it list?
Well, it's I can't, you know, like people would say like the Iggy Azaleas and the the idea of One Direction, but it's more the concepts and what you see as what's being portrayed and what I'm supposed to buy into. That's what bothers me. That, you know, because it's not about the performance, more the actual opening of the mouth and what sound comes out. It's more about what you're, you know, trying to convey, and the framework is so much more important that it's just backwards.
Well, it's interesting because Taylor Swift made no bones about the fact that she wasn't singing. It was almost like it's dangerous territory to pretend that I am singing, so that we should just shine a light on the fact that I'm not and not even pretend. I'd never seen it that overt before.
Yeah, well, that's where we're at. It's come to this. It's like now with rock bands, where initially an album was a recording of what the band was live, because that's all they were, was a live entity. And they recorded that, and that would become an album. And now here, at this day and age, it's an album is something that takes months to prepare, and it's almost expected that you can't reproduce it live. So there's an acceptance there, and it's got more to do with, like, it's a motion picture or something.
But if Our Lady of Peace is playing on the Junos or Much Music or something, that's live, right?
Yeah, for sure. But
it's not a track or singing the track.
But it seems like the more popular you get and the bigger the show and the more important the show, the less the live comes into play, you know, to the point of the Super Bowl where the Chili Peppers weren't even doing anything because they say it's just impossible to sound good.
Right.
So what the heck's the point? What's going on? It's all just a commercial.
Sorry about that, bud, but
you have to, you know, we got back to the Chili Peppers again.
Oh, I know. You have a hate on for them.
Well, it's just so, like, derivative and formula-driven. It's just, and the idea of it is, you know, kind of, like, quickly put together funk.
The 5 Seconds of Summer kids, I don't know if you saw them, they at least play their own instruments. Granted, I realized midway through their performance what I dug about it was that they were doing a cover. And I think it was That's What I Like About You. And at least they're playing their own instruments. I dig that.
Yeah.
As opposed to the One Direction folks, just, you know, it's karaoke, really.
But they're singing it. They're supposed to. They don't play instruments. The 5 Seconds band, they play their instruments. But it was it like miming the instruments, or were they actually playing them?
It's a good question. I would suggest they were actually playing them.
But they may have been miming them.
Yeah, they might have been playing the track. I mean, I know from doing Jonovision, it's obviously a little different. But if you're going to sound check 6-7 bands in an afternoon, the only fighting chance you have is to let them play the track and have live vocals. But on a show the size of the esteemed AMAs, presumably they have a few days of sound checks, and it should be live.
Yeah. Well, but like you said, these big shows now, they'll listen and they'll make that decision. I don't know.
Did you ever have a screw up on a live show?
Screw ups,
yeah,
like where you suck,
yeah, or your stick breaks, or you fall over, or something goes sideways.
Not to the point of like train wreck. No, it's been train wrecks live, but not on a TV show. Not that
what?
I can remember.
And what's a train wreck?
Block. A train wreck is when everybody has to stop. Like you have to.
Oh my gosh, going. That happened.
Oh yeah,
on
that
a live show.
The first time when I was in Our Lady Peace, our first show ever, we had to stop during a song in Backstreet in Montreal, opening for the Tea Party. And the Tea Party were like watching at the side of the stage.
And they were like, who are these losers?
We were playing Naveed, and I don't even know what happened, but like two of us started playing another song or another part of the song. It was so bad that like nobody had a clue what to play, so we had to stop, and it was just, you know, made out of it, and we were done. The show was over.
Best, Tea Party was standing in
show,
the Doors,
best first show
appropriately
ever.
Enough. obviously on a different scale, but Miniature Ponies, our little country band, had our first gig last Friday night.
Yeah, the ponies.
Here's what happened. It wasn't a train wreck.
What did you guys start with?
Tight-fitting jeans, Conway Twitty.
Beautiful.
But here's the thing. Our drummer, Darcy, was working on a film set 45 minutes outside of town. And as the gig was getting closer, the guys who were supposed to go on after us were kind enough to go first so nice. That they let us buy some time for Darcy to get there. Mm-hmm. Then the headliner bailed, so they ultimately ended up going last. We were second, and then there was an opening dude named Levon, who's great. So as the time approaches for us to go on stage, Darcy's texting me saying, I'm stuck on set. It's a snowstorm. We just started a new scene. There's a stunt in it. I don't think I'm going to make it.
Whoa, yeah. This is when you tweeted to me saying,
can you get down here? Bud? Yeah, how fast can you get here, bud? So fortunately, Mike Clattenburg, creator of Trailer Park Boys, friend of mine for some 25 years, and
drummer.
Exceptional drummer,
yep.
is in the bar. He came to see us.
No.
Yeah. He was actually two doors down having dinner when I texted him saying, are you around? And he was like, yeah. So Mike sat behind the kit as we started our set, having never practiced with us, having never played with us, and like a trooper, filled in for, I think, four or five songs before Darcy could get there.
Wow.
Now, this is the amazing thing, speaking of train wreck. I said to the people in the bar, all Baker's dozen of them, this is the situation. Mike's never practiced with us. He's going to sit in. Darcy is going to come, and when he walks in the door, I want everybody to go, Darcy! And even if it's mid-song, Mike and Darcy will switch out and keep going. Nice. So midway through Queen of Hearts by Juice
Queen
Newton,
of Hearts?
Yeah. Countrified Queen of Hearts. Darcy walks in the door. I say, Darcy! Everybody in the whole place goes, Darcy! Mike and Darcy switch. We actually did end up starting Queen of Hearts again with Darcy behind the kit. But I don't think I could have scripted it any better because it was kind of a high wire act. And I think when you're in the crowd for something like that, knowing something's not gone as planned, it's kind of exciting. Especially when it isn't a total train wreck.
That's great. That sounds like you had a good time.
We did have a good time, bud. We did have a good time. And I was more nervous than I'd care to confess. But it's good to do things that are outside your comfort zone. And it was really fun.
That's awesome. And Clattenburg laid her down for you.
Yeah, he did. He did. He's a phenomenal drummer and a phenomenal guy. He took it really seriously and had our backs. And it was interesting because he played some tunes faster than we did, like 6 days on the road.
Sure.
And he played some tunes slower than we normally did, like Handle Me With Care. But you actually find different things in songs when they're played at different speeds, as you know better than anybody.
Sure. Well, as long as they're in grooving, that's the thing I find. It's he was perhaps playing them closer to the album versions.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Yeah, it is possible. And my wife and I talk about this all the time. If we're going to have folks over for dinner, it doesn't matter if the rolls are burnt or the rice didn't really turn out. All you want is for people to leave your home saying, that was fun. They seem to really enjoy having us there. And I think it's the same when you're performing to a degree. The crowd doesn't want to pick up on nervous energy or that you're kind of not into it. They just want to have a good time. And if you are having a good time while you're performing, that is infectious.
It is.
I don't think it could be said that we weren't having a good time.
Beautiful.
It'll be like that Stone show at the Elmo when there were, you know, 9 people there and now 700 people that claim to have been there.
Yeah, everybody that was in the music industry was there.
Yeah.
As well as the Police show.
Was Ronnie there?
Yeah.
At the Stones?
Ronnie was there.
Yeah.
Ronnie definitely wouldn't have gone even if there was an opportunity to go. He was not a fan.
He's never has been?
Never has been a fan of the Stones. My dad was more a Beatles fan.
That's fair.
I think because his mom had a thing for Mick Jagger, which is
so that turned him off the Stones.
I would assume so. It turns me off. And I think it would turn it like her talking about Mick Jagger all the time.
You should have a T-shirt that says "My Nana had a thing for Mick Jagger."
My Nana. I didn't call her Nana, but my grandma, straight up.
my grandma had a thing for Mick Jagger. That's a great t-shirt slogan.
That's great. Hey, do you want to talk? We got a good topic game coming up.
And yeah.
I'm excited to play it. It's the greasiest spots in Canada.
The Greasies. It's our first annual The Greasies. And of course, as always, we solicit your votes and thoughts for the greasiest spots in Canada. I mean, let's start with the obvious kind of bars and things, but the Greasies could really be expanded to include bus stops and malls.
Yeah, or like just
taxi stands.
Places that you didn't even think existed. You know, like, where am I really in a place like this?
Right.
That's greasy.
The great thing about greasy spots is that every town has their own, like, by the statue or under the gazebo or, in the park. There are some greasy spots. Definitely. Extra points for, like, it doesn't seem greasy on the surface, but now I get exactly why it's greasy.
Like the fifth floor bathroom at the Eaton Center.
Greasy.
That's a greasy spot.
Fourth floor, immaculate. Go fig, Newton. We'll take a break. We'll get right into the Greasies. Hang on.
Where's my beer chair?
Is Jeremy there, please?
Jonathan. Oh, we stepped all over each other off the gate there. Hey.
Did you have Not Allowed London when you were a kid?
Did I have what?
It might be a maritime thing. Say you got a new bike.
Not Allowed London?
London. Say you what got a new that? Bike for your birthday. And I'd say, hey, can I take your bike for a spin? And you'd say, not allowed lending. Like your parents said, you can't lend your bike to people. And the response was always like, well, your parents aren't going to see. Like, we're behind the school. Let me, no, not allowed lending.
Oh, not allowed lending. Well, I remember that. Definitely the feeling of that. Like kids that did that.
Come on, man. Just let me try your bike.
I wasn't a fan of that kid, believe me. You didn't? Did you have to do that?
Who, the Let Me Try Your Biker? The Let Me Try Your Bike kid? You didn't like that guy?
Well, I didn't like the Let Me Try Your Bike kid, but I didn't like the I can't lend, I'm not allowed to lend.
No, I didn't like that kid either.
Yeah, like they kind of equal each other out in a sense.
In 1980, all the kids had navy Adidas rugby pants with red stripes down the side. Do you remember rugby pants?
Oh, yeah. I had a pair.
Stretch elastic waist and pockets on the side.
I also had the gray with the purple stripes.
So those are the ones that I had. All the kids had navy ones. It's all I wanted for Christmas, and I got the gray with purple stripes.
Yeah.
And you might as well be an albino pigeon. Like, everyone else was like, what? That's not even the same galaxy. So I wore my gray with purple striped Adidas rugby pants to school, and Vincey Keenan, who was the school bully, pushed me down, and I got a hole in the knee of my rugby pants the first day I wore them to school. And I guess having gray rugby pants was better than having no rugby pants. Yeah. But what happened is my eyes filled with tears, and then he had bully's remorse. So he came over and was like, well, can your mom darn the hole in your knee? I was like, you know what, Vincey, don't even worry about it, bud. It's too late to be having remorse.
He throws out darn.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
No, do you think your mom can darn the hole in your knee? Don't even worry about it, Vince. How you like me now?
That sucks. Yeah, you gave it right back to him. Like, how do you like it?
And I had my hands in my rugby pants pockets because that's how what the kids did, and I was trying to look cool, and it's hard to look cool with tears in your eyes. There are two circumstances under which it's hard to look cool. One is with tears in your eyes, and the second is in the middle of the back seat of the car.
No, and there's another.
If you're fifth man, you can't look cool.
You can't look cool in a headlock either. And remember those half-hour fights?
And you're just, oh, man.
And it's like the one guy's in the headlock, and he's like, whatever, man. Like, no big deal.
That was like, me.
No way.
That was me with Vincey Keenan. I put my hands in my rugby pants pockets when he had me in the headlock, and I said, you can beat me up if you want, Vincey, but I'm the low man on the social totem pole. Like, beating me up doesn't get you any status. I was trying to reason with him.
But that sounds like you were trying your best to look cool in that headlock.
Hands in the pockets, trying to look cool. And the girls were going, freak off, Vincey, he's right funny.
Oh, man.
Too bad.
I remember a guy pulled my hair so hard, I thought it was like, it actually felt good. It didn't hurt anymore. And the same idea. And he was like yanking it so hard that I was like, man, this is weird. It's actually cool now.
You surfed through the pain.
Yeah.
Do you want to, like, bully-wise, how's this for an unfair playing field? My grade 8 bully was sleeping with my English teacher. And he was one of those kids who was, like, 16 in grade 8. So he had his license. He used her car to chase us. Which is not fair. I had to take the bus and transfer to a different bus and go all the way to downtown Halifax. And I get off the bus near my house, and this silver Honda Civic is behind the bus.
Oh, man.
Like, that's not fair.
That's full on. That's next level. And the fact that he, like, had carte blanche because the teacher would never tell on him.
But don't you find, I mean, so much stuff went on that in those days was just kind of normal. That if it happened now, people would lose their minds.
I know.
And it was kind of like, it wasn't like this was the best kept secret. It was fairly common knowledge that they were pounding.
Yeah, and he's got her car. He's taken her car. That's over the top.
Yeah, and it was one of those hatchbacks too. Like, not even the little sedan looking one with the ground effects. It was like full on English teacher Honda Civic.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we called him Fulligan. Because he'd always corner me and my friends and say, I'm going to Fulligan kill you, and then Fulligan kill you, and I'm going to Fulligan kill you.
Oh, man. That's Fulligan. That is a scary bully.
Yeah. Well, also, he could vote. Like, he could vote. He was so much older than us.
Yeah. I remember the bully that I had was a really huge kid. Like, he was big, but also fat. And he was just...
So you could at least outrun him.
Yeah.
Yeah, our bully was a spectacular physical specimen.
One time he's pounded my head against a concrete wall. Like, what kind of a bully move is that? Like, that's like a old Roman bully move. Like,
that's grabbing a harsh. Kid,
smashing his head against a cement wall, and then walking away.
Like, that is, I mean, I suppose in today's standards, that would be assault.
Oh, yeah, man, knocked out. In the gym.
But dude, what, like, didn't you have teachers that threw chalk at you or picked up your desk when you were sitting in them? Things like that?
Yeah, for sure. Yep. That, or the ones that would just scream so loud at you that, like, it hurt your head. Or the ones that had the super darts coffee breath and they'd be yelling at you and they'd be like, you could smell them and it's just making you want to throw up.
Or the ones that had liquor on their breath. We had some of those.
Yeah.
I had a very physically imposing guidance counselor in junior high who walked onto the volleyball court and caught the volleyball in one hand to ask me where my chocolate bar money was. It was
That's
bad.
Why you wonder why you don't like school. I had a math teacher in grade 9 high school that, like, all he would talk about is how his grandfather invented the hockey net. And he would go on and on about it, and then
weird claim to fame.
Apparently, snapped. Like, the year after or so, he just one day started. I'm not kidding. He brought in his golf clubs.
Oh my god!
And he just started hitting golf balls out the window, like, and the kids were like running out of the room.
Whoa!
He's like, set a ball up. Yeah, just gonna fire one of these and through the window, and pulled that one a bit.
He was the dad of a kid? He was the dad of a kid? At the school?
No, he wasn't. He was the teacher in the class.
Oh my gosh.
And he just, like, snapped one day and, like, started hitting golf balls through the window, and that was it. He was done.
Gone, never seen again.
But he was one of those teachers who'd worked there for 30 years and just, like, was numb, you know?
It's funny,
though. My grandfather invented the hockey net, kids.
And it's funny how in small towns,
like, whatev.
And he was right. Yeah. It's funny how in small towns people get a rap like, oh yeah, there's the town perv. There's Duncan the town perv. And everyone knows that he's the town perv and he drives a white van and everybody knows to look out for it. But he doesn't move away and nothing ever happens. It's just kind of, the longer you're around something, the more it's just accepted as normal. So weird.
Yeah.
So in grade 9, I was on the B basketball team, and the A basketball team was coached by a nylon tracksuit wearing 50-something man with dark sunglasses named Mr. Gannon.
Greasy.
And a kid was, like, zipped all the way up to the neck, like he was cool. And a kid on the A-team got sick. So I got called up to the A-team just in time to go on a trip to New Brunswick. And we were winning, like, I don't know, by 20 points or something. And Mr. Gannon came over to me on the bench and said, I'm going to put you in. Just don't touch the ball, dog. So,
come on.
Yeah, Mr. Gannon put me in the
sunglasses?
Game. Yeah.
And he talked like that? Zipped up.
I'm going to put you in the game, but don't touch the ball, dog.
That's how he talked?
Yep. And I was like, what okay, was Mr. Gannon.
Seeing the wrecking crew?
He was like, he brought his game down tight. I was like, okay, Mr. Gannon. So they put me in the game, and the guy on my team inbounded the ball to me. I was like, well, I can't not catch the ball because Mr. Gannon said, don't touch it. So I caught the ball, and I turned around in our end, and I one-hand, like, quarterback length of the field, Hail Mary'd the ball 50 feet from the net, and it went out of bounds, and then I was pulled out of the game.
God.
That was it.
You were just so scared that you had the ball.
Mr. Gannon.
I had a baseball coach that was creepy, but not way more creepy than that guy. He was just creepy because he was just strange.
Yeah.
I had one that was definitely like a pedophile and like taking advantage of
Well, kids. What is the vetting process for coaches? I mean, let me preface it politically correctly by saying it's an enormous sacrifice. It's a volunteer position and 99.99% of them are awesome.
Yeah.
But the odd, weird cat does sneak through. It's true.
Well, this creep had like him, and this was in York, in Toronto, for the like the rep team. So it was like him and his buddy from Rochester. Tom was his name, and his buddy Fran from Rochester. And they were both creeps. And they would like take... They'd have like one kid like keeping score, but he would like stay with them on the trip, like because we'd be traveling around Ontario, and he would be. They'd like keep the kid with them, and the kid was all quiet, and you could tell something was going on, and you know, it was one of those weird situations. Awful. When you're a kid, you're like, "What is happening here? What is this? Like, what kind of deal is this? And how is it acceptable?" And here we are, all this stuff goes on, and people say, how come you don't just come out and say it? But, like, yeah, what do you do, tell a cop? And then how come the kid doesn't say anything, or the parents, and letting the kid go? It's just so ridiculous, but...
And you don't know why, but you're just your spidey senses are tingling. It's off, right? There's something weird about this.
Yeah, yeah, you just figure this is too much to be real. And the guy, the way that they were, the coaches, and the way they treated you, you know? It was, and I get my parents were always weary of them just as being creepy anyway.
My first drink of hard liquor was with a soccer coach who, when I was 12, fabricated a tournament in New Brunswick. Whoa. And took half a dozen dudes camping in New Brunswick to drink.
No way.
Yeah. And we drank vodka because it does, you can't smell it on your breath or through your pores. Like... Again, a little offside.
Wow.
Nothing untoward happened, but you look back and think, why was that okay?
Yeah.
What happened greasy. To the Greasies? Speaking of Greasies.
We're talking greasy people, and we're getting into the Greasies.
All right, let's take a quick, like super quick break, and we'll get into the Greasies. Come back, will
you? Would you like some egg and beans? Fuck off! You're not my mom!
And we're back.
So we put out a call to people on the internet service saying we were going to be doing the Greasies, and we were looking for the greasiest bars in Canada. It's funny because at first we thought maybe we'd do greasiest spots, and then we realized there are probably enough greasy bars in Canada. Between the two of us, we probably know enough, but between the two of us and all the people... There's probably one in every town and city across Canada because everybody has a place. There's a place not far from us that when I started dating my wife, she was like, do you want to go to the Pick a Pig? I was like, is that actually a bar? No, that's just what people call it at closing time. So we put out the ask, what is the greasiest place in Canada? The response has been overwhelming, and there's some places with multiple votes, which is wild.
Yeah.
So I'll just list a few. Doubles. Jolly Roger in Regina. It's kind of better not Like, just by knowing what town it is and the name, you kind of don't have to know more than that. The warehouse in Petawawa, Ontario. Phil's in Waterloo got a few votes.
Oh.
The Palomino Club in Winnipeg got a couple of votes. There was a shout-out for a Dooley's in Charlottetown. I think Dooley's, the pool hall chain across Canada, is probably safe to say it's pretty greasy.
It's actually probably historically greasy, and maybe the monopoly of greasy back in the 70s.
Has Dooley's been around that long?
Well, I mean, I don't maybe that or the concept of that, where it's like the pool hall bar.
Pool halls are greasy.
Yeah, man, they were. Like, if you hung out at a pool hall under 15, you were smoking darts already.
For
like,
sure.
Guaranteed.
You'd crush a few Export 8 greens waiting for somebody to run the table so you could take them on.
Every kid that I knew that hung out at a pool hall crushed darts.
Yeah.
And that was like grade 6, 7, 8.
Which came first, the darts or the pool? Like, did you take up pool and have to start crushing darts? Or were you on the darts and that's where your people gathered?
Maybe, right? Like, you tried mom and dad's darts outside, and then next thing you know, you're bumming darts at the pool hall. That's how you get there.
Nathan, where are my Rothman's king size? I don't know, Nan. Studio 4 in Windsor, Cabaret Club in Belleville, Harmony Lunch and Sonny's Burgers in Waterloo. We should do the Blind Pig in St. Albert, Alberta. We should do a road trip across the country.
Yeah.
Hitting all these greasy spots. The Dome in Halifax is one that came up. The Dirty Dome, also known as the Liquor Dome. It's a place that boasts original carpet in the heart of downtown.
And you and I have both had some pretty dirty nights in the Dome.
The legend goes, you can get pregnant on the dance floor at the Dome. Like, especially when, put it this way, when there are sailors in town, the Dome is covered in semen.
Yikes.
The Brunswick House in Toronto?
That place is ridiculous, the Dome, just the aspect of it.
Well, it's the perfect storm of bad ideas.
It's like where you end up, and it's just so big. Like, it's so big.
There's like, it's a dry humpery of epic proportions if you haven't been here. It's like 5 bars. They're open till 3:30. It's where everyone goes after all the other bars are closed. Yeah. It's geography's cruel trick, right? It's a downhill walk at the start of the night and then a cruel uphill walk at the end of the night. It's a place where people go to fight and make love.
Yes.
Sometimes with the same person.
Yes.
The Brunswick House is your neck of the woods.
The Brunswick House is
the Brunny.
Super greasy. Yeah, that's like the famous, everybody said that it was like the recycled bar, like they'll take the pitcher and bring it in the back and then just
take
it to the next table.
Backwash.
But everybody would, it's just empty tables with benches and that's it. You sit there, there's a stage for dancing and you just get hammered. I remember one night, I think it was like 1993 or something, and my brother Jet and our cousin Elliot went out there, and it was always the big thing to get banged up before you go out as a kid at that point. I didn't drink at the time, but they were getting hammered beforehand, but we got to the place, and then it's one of those places where people just get so into the concept of getting hammered and that's it. And it's college and everybody's young and it's all you see is people just trying to dominate drinking. And my brother Jetson, who's pretty good at drinking himself, was so hammered by the end of the night. He was like standing up on the stage and we're from I think at the time was like, concerned about what to wear or something and didn't have, like, his shoes were crappy, so he borrowed my cousin's like cowboy boots. Remember, cowboy boots were a big deal.
Oh my god.
So there's Jet up there dancing all slow to Black by Pearl Jam.
Hideous.
And he's all going back and forth, these cowboy boots and this denim shirt.
Was he wearing Edwin French baggies
for
jeans?
I don't know, maybe like Probably like black acid wash.
Oh my gosh.
So then we would like get outside, and there was always like a fire truck at that place at the end of the night outside, because it's so many people are getting banged up and there's fights. So
a fire truck. That's a sign of a terrible spot.
Always just waiting because somebody's passed out or something. And there's like three or four fights, so we are walking down the street, and then all of a sudden Jet, all banged up, kicks the sign over at this, like, I don't know, like a pizza place or something. And the owner comes out, "Hey, what are you doing? What are you doing?" And Jet starts going like, "Who cares?" and like throwing the garbage can, and I was like, "Jet, stop it, you're making a big mess." And all of a sudden this cook chef guy comes out from the back, and he's like, he looks exactly like Mr. Miyagi from the Karate Kid,
right?
And but he's younger, probably like 40 something. He starts stretching. He's like doing these like deep knee leg stretches,
like he's gonna fight him.
Yeah, like he was getting all ready, and then he's doing these kicks in the air, and all of a sudden we just started running.
Oh my gosh.
So all I see is me and Elliot go one way and Jet goes the other way, and we're like hiding behind some alley, and we hear cops coming and cop cars, and it's just chaos, and all of a sudden we hear Jet's boots coming, this tick 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 tick, and he's like running as fast as he can by us.
He flew past in cowboy boots? Holy cow.
Just running tick, tick, tick along the sidewalk with these boots. Just great night. That's a classic example of what would happen at the Brunswick House on any given Friday, Saturday
night.
What a
terrible spot. Did you guys ever go back?
I'm sure maybe once or twice, but you kind of grow out of that. You can't really go there after age 22, I don't think.
There was a place in Halifax called the Lord Nelson Beverage Room, and it was where
pretty greasy.
The guys who had been kicked out of every other bar in town, this is where they gathered. And my sister took me there one Christmas Eve when I was 15, and we got all banged up on draft.
Whoa.
And got home for Christmas Eve dinner, and for some reason it was a tradition in our house to make something totally the opposite of turkey dinner, so she made a big homemade pizza. Long story short, though, it's much too late. I barfed the tub on Christmas Eve and clogged the tub in our apartment.
Oh,
so
man.
That all Christmas Day, the tub was clogged with barf. Draft foam barf and homemade pizza barf. And we couldn't get a plumber to come out till Boxing Day. That hideous nice Christmas.
Nice Christmas.
But what kind of place lets a 15-year-old kid pound pitchers of draft? The Lord Nelson Beverage Room.
I remember, I think it was the dome where I went with Smith. Is that to have the steps down at the end?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was so banged up, I was peeing on the steps.
Walking like, down the steps or up the steps?
Kind of like half, like on the way down, peeing on the steps. And it was just like so ridiculous and pathetic. And then the girl that was with Mike at the time fell in the pee and like rolled down on it. And I started laughing and she started getting really angry. And
what good can happen at that hour of the night? How about this for the description of the Fraser in North Bay from Scrib Squatch? Mullet karaoke, leopard print cougars, and all the darts you can smoke.
Oh.
That sounds like a good spot.
That does.
The zoo it's in Winnipeg, right?
The zoo in Winnipeg, one of our first shows when I was in OLP opening for I Mother Earth in 1994 at the zoo, and we actually stayed there. And there's like hypodermic needles under the beds.
Come on.
The hotel rooms and like hookers knocking on the door like every hour and like ugly hookers, like looking like, you know, Nell Carter kind of hookers. And like, just like, give me a break.
Give me a break, yeah, yeah. Give me a break. Like, is Jacques A knocking on your door?
No, I think Jacques A would have been a plus, that we're getting more Nell Carter and Ving Rhames looking women.
Wow.
But anyway.
Hey, what's Jeremy's girlfriend like? She's nice. She looks like Ving Rhames.
So, I'm pretty sure there was like a spine in the alley when we were loading in the gear. Like a human spine.
Oh my God.
And there was these like bouncers, like these three huge bouncers and then one little bouncer. And they were all bald guys. And they looked like they were maybe bikers, but they were tough as nails. And they would just like beat up on the little bald guy. Like he was the newer guy, I guess. And he had to work his way up. And I saw this one thing that they were doing was like the two big guys would hold the little guy up against a pool table. And another guy would come and run, like, wrestling into the turnbuckle on him against the back. So he would smash against the pool table. Like, insanity. Like, like the guy could have broken bones.
Your dues at the zoo.
Yeah, man. You do not want to try and, like, work your way up that system.
Well, the person who name-checked the zoo here just said bloodstained carpet, ..
This was during the day, those hijinks. So those guys were probably, you know, fighting people at night. Maybe that was like practice.
This is the thing, though. I have to say, generally, I'm more comfortable in a dive bar than I am in a mock turtleneck, what is love kind of place.
Yeah, well, that's not really... Is that a bar? That's like a... That's just too loud to have any fun at those places.
Listen to this description of boomers in Hamilton, Ontario. Neon palm trees, underagers, cougars, coke on the toilets, and karaoke Fridays.
That sounds pretty greasy. Yeah. Hamilton can have some good greasy nights.
I mean, everywhere has greasy places, right?
Yeah.
Do you know, one of the most literally greasy places I've ever been, have you ever been to Banff?
Yeah.
You know the place that does... like bear fondue, but it used to be a swingers club. Still has phones on the table. I think it's called the Grizzly House.
Wow. I think I know the one you're talking
about. In the 60s, it was a swingers thing. So there were phones on the table so you could call like, hey, table four. Yeah. But now it's a place where they do fondue with like wild game and stuff. Banff Grizzly House. That's it.
I think I've been there. Yeah. And it's not as greasy now.
But it's physically greasy because they cook bear and muskox and stuff, so you feel like you're covered in grease for a few days after you leave. Plus, knowing the greasy history of the place, it's literally greasy.
Definitely. I'm about greased out on the greasies. How about we do some Guess the Greaser?
Let's take a little break, and we'll be back in this grease theme to play a game called Guess the Greaser. Hold the wedding. We'll be right back, Muriel.
And we're back. How are you, Jonathan?
Fantastic. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. I got my cup of coffee, and it's nighttime.
Yes,
it is. I ain't going to sleep at all.
It's Taggart and Torrens in the evening.
Oh, is that how it is? I guess we'll have to put on the fog hat then, and I got my cans.
So we thought it might be fun to find some grease balls. We play this game in our house all the time. You read three statements about somebody and you have to guess who it is. So we thought, born out of the greasies, we would do this game with grease balls and see if we could guess the grease balls. So you're going to go first. You're going to read two statements about a guy or a lady and then...
Two quotes from this greasy person.
Okay.
Maybe three, depending on...
Can a woman be a grease ball?
I don't know. Most of them...
Is that sexist? I mean,
unless they're like... Yeah, like Casey Anthony, I think, would be a grease ball.
But grease ball's kind of a funny thing, because I found in my early looking into, okay, who'd be a good grease ball, a lot of them were kind of sex scandal related.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say the grease ball is necessarily a sex thing.
Yeah, but they're generally the ones that are greasy or like that. We're talking about that type of a person more than like somebody. Well, we'll see where we're at here. The grease balls that we picked.
Right. Well, I guess we'll see where we're at because it is an interesting definition. Like some people are pricks, some people are a-holes, and it is a different type of label that we're putting on someone. So curious to see who you picked for Greaseballs. Let's hear your two quotes.
Okay. Strength does not come from winning. Your struggles develop your strengths. When you go through hardships and decide not to surrender, that is strength. What is the point of being on this earth if you're going to be like everyone else? Money doesn't have to make you happy. Money doesn't make you happy. I now have 50 million, but I was just as happy when I had 48 million.
No.
Yeah.
My first, it's funny, my first thought was Nelson Mandela.
What?
When you read the first quote, my first thought was, that sounds like something Nelson Mandela would say.
Oh,
and
my
then,
God.
Of course, I thought,
yeah.
You're not saying he's a greaseball.
Yeah, no.
Then the next name that popped into my head was Donald Trump, but he has more than 50 million bucks.
Yeah.
So who's a greaseball that isn't Nelson Mandela, obviously, that has 50 million bucks?
Maybe if I did one with the voice?
Well, I'm not going to say no to that.
Because instead of saying who it is, it might be funnier.
Okay.
You have to remember as something, everybody pities the weak. Jealousy you have to earn.
David Schwimmer? Arnold Schwarzenegger.
A guy who had a kid with his maid.
Right.
Looks exactly like him.
So weird. But isn't Miley Cyrus is pounding his kid right now?
No, yeah. The kid that... Not the maid's kid.
No, the maid's kid would be a toddler, wouldn't it?
No, the maid's kid's grown up. The maid's kid was go like on family trips with them and stuff. And he had like the big gap in his teeth.
No.
Yes.
Is that how Maria Shriver figured it out?
Yeah. Well, look at the picture of the kid, man. It's like him.
Oh my gosh, that would make for an uncomfortable trip to Cancun.
Yeah, if you gotta take a look at that.
What's your baby's name? Patrick.
Yeah.
Well, Miley Cyrus is pounding one of Arnold Schwarzenegger's kids.
Yeah.
Or a couple, I don't know.
No, I think the one with Maria Shriver, the normal relationship one, not the side relationship.
So, not the side piece.
Oh, man.
Not the maid that he was pounding that looked like Gerard Depardieu, like she was not an attractive woman.
Yeah, no, not whatsoever. That had everything to do with probably like just the fact that she was in the room.
Brutal.
No one else was.
Interesting that you think Schwarzenegger's a greaseball.
Well, come on.
Because of the maid thing or because of...
Well, just the fact that he kind of greased his way into politics.
Yeah, I guess he did.
And he didn't really last because he was slacky crap there and... He's greasy.
All right, I'm going to read three statements.
Okay.
Because the first one, you won't know who it is right away. I think you might know who it is with the other ones. Here it comes. You ready?
Yeah.
I wrote a kid's book this year. I'm an under-the-hammer bird jabber. I got ruined by one punch this week. And man, he deserved it.
I got ruined?
Bruined. It's a hint.
Oh.
I'm an under-the-hammer bird jabber. And I got bruined by one punch this week.
Oh, man.
His first name is a city in Italy.
Oh, Milan Lucic?
Yeah.
There you go. Nice.
He's a greaseball.
Is he a greaseball, though? Or is he just a crazy nut bar?
Well, by my definition, he's a grease ball. I don't think you jab dudes in the hammer if you're not.
Yeah, well, I don't know. A lot of those guys are beating the heck out of people because that's their job, right?
I guess so. I mean, there's such thing as an agitator. Here's the thing. As I've said before, I feel like he plays with passion. And would I want him on my team? Probably. But he's certainly somebody that everybody loves to hate.
Sure. But you want him on your team.
Yeah, but he's still a grease ball.
Okay.
Like, remember him whispering into Dale Weiss's ear, I'm going to kill your family?
Yeah, I think he's nuts. But, like, a lot of those types of guys are crazy.
And he wrote a book about anti-bullying. Go figure.
There you go.
All right, hit me.
You ready?
Yeah. And this time, do the voice if there's a voice.
Well, this one isn't really as voicey, and it's... I don't want to do something to make myself stupid. Okay, I could not tell you the date of my mother's death. I could not tell you the date of my dad's death. These are not dates that I find significant. Pretty greasy thing to say, no?
Sheesh, yeah.
I'm absolutely 100% not guilty. If there wasn't no fight, there wasn't no weekend.
O.J. Simpson?
Yay!
Really?
Wonderful. Yes.
Crazy. It was the I am 100% innocent.
Yeah, that's pretty classic.
Man.
Yeah. O.J. Like,
there's another person whose fall from grace was really unbelievable. I remember I was sitting on a ferry with Brian Hyten, the guy that played Ken Pompadour in Street Sense. We were traveling from France to Ireland to use a Royal Bank bank machine, and CNN was on with the Al Cowlings Bronco chase, and I'd never seen anything like it in my life. Mm-hmm. There were a few moments that kind of gave birth to CNN, and man, that was one of them. It was inconceivable that you could actually watch breaking news of that significance as it was happening. It's crazy.
Yeah, I remember the same thing being, I think I was on tour when it was on, the actual Bronco chase. But I remember actually being in L.A. and our A&R guy actually drove us up to Brentwood to the house. And like the caution tape was around the house and the police were still guarding it. And
really?
Before the trial was over with and stuff. So it was still fresh.
Jeremy really Taggart. Did O.J. what? Do it?
Huh?
Did O.J. do it?
Oh, man. Well, he knew something's up. And he's in jail anyway for the stupidest crime in history of trying to steal
really
his own
a
stuff
dumb
back.
Crime.
Yeah.
But he did it, right?
Yeah. I think he did.
What did Cato Kaelin know? And who would play Cato Kaelin in the movie?
There's so many, like, norbs in Hollywood that can fill the Cato role.
I know.
Like, there's so many guys that started in Hollywood as that guy. That, like, you know, slept with actresses and lived in their houses because they were cute, and then all of a sudden, you know, got the role they needed and they moved on.
Dustin Diamond from Dustin Saved by the Bell could play Cato Kaelin.
Yeah, he's pretty greasy looking though.
What about Kaley Cuoco from Big Bang Theory? She could play Cato Kaelin. Yeah,
that would be pretty good. That's a good one.
All right, here's my next one. You ready?
Yep.
I believe it's better to be pissed on than pissed off. I believe I can fly.
Ooh, R. Kelly.
Yeah.
That's pretty greasy.
He's greasy, right?
Oh, he's guaranteed greasy.
Do you
100%
know?
100% greasy. I know for a fact, we played a show at the HF Festival in Washington, D.C., and a security guard that, you know, it was a huge show with 50,000 people for the radio station, and like Eminem was playing, and it was massive. Anyway, one of the security guards was like, had been dealing with R. Kelly like a few months prior, and he was disgusted by his behavior and was like telling me about it. Let's like, yeah, he was like telling people to go and select like the girls with like the most acne or freckles
no.
Braces, you know, stuff that are youth, you know, make sure that the young, that you happen only when you're really young. I don't like that.
That's just so sick.
Yeah. So that's, I agree with you there.
People that I considered, Charlie Sheen, is he a greaseball?
Oh, yeah.
He's I kind of felt like he was a greaseball, but I felt like it was a little too obvious.
Yeah, you can't live that much entitled, much of an entitled life without being greasy.
Like, how does it happen that there are two prongs on the fork, and one becomes Emilio Estevez, and the other becomes Charlie Sheen? How does that happen?
I don't know. Because, you know, what's funny is, like, Martin Sheen is a little bit of both, if you think about it.
He is, yep.
He kind of had that really crazy banged up guy, but he also had that straight guy.
Interesting.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I'll tell you, the very first person that popped into my head when we decided we were going to do Guess the Greaser was Joe Francis, founder of Girls Gone Wild.
Oh, that guy.
Because he is just
he in jail?
Looks like. I don't think he is, because I looked him up and he just had twin girls, which is...
Oh, that's right. He did time.
The universe's way of, you know, giving him his...
He made him so much money that he had a bunch of money to when he got out.
Like, yeah, but so then he got into a thing with Steve Wynn of Wynn Casino fame. There was a lawsuit there, and I think he lost a third of his net worth. He lost 50 milzy in a lawsuit with Steve Wynn. Wow. Like, just nothing above board going on with Joe Francis.
Yeah, that is really greasy. I
don't hey, know, since could, since we like Canadianity...
There was no chance of coming up with a quote about that guy. Cause
no hell no. Yeah. Since we like Canadianity, are there any Canadian greaseballs?
Well, there's Gion. We know that for sure. Yeah. He's kind of like the pyramid and perhaps the reason the greasies kind of came about.
Yeah, in a roundabout way.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. We don't really need a trial to know that. Who else is greasy and Canadian? Like, Bill Cosby's pretty damn greasy.
He's, you're not kidding. And by all accounts, that story has... come back into the spotlight because of the Gion thing, which is an incredible testament to the power of social media.
Yes.
Do you know who's a greaseball? And I didn't know it at the time. Have you ever seen Fergie Oliver from Just Like Mom?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the video on YouTube where he's macking on children?
Yes, yes. That
guy I know it was a different time, but that is hella weird.
He should be behind bars, that guy, and he's not. But he's, like, hidden.
What does he do now? He must be retired. Because wasn't he the Blue Jays guy?
Yeah, he did the Jays forever and, like, you know, probably little things here and there. But, yeah, that guy is clearly creepy.
So we have a pretty small, it's like a small of fame for greaseballs in Canada. There's Fergie Oliver and Gion, that's it.
But I don't even think Fergie Oliver is Canadian. I think he just kind of came up here for the work.
I want to tell you something. I was watching E-Talk last night, and I think...
You were watching E-Talk?
Yeah, I was.
You're just catching up on your Canadian celeb gossip, were you?
Well, here's what happened. I flipped by, and I'm a big Ben Mulrooney supporter. I think he unnecessarily gets a hard time. I love when he fires back at people on Twitter. It's really funny. He's really clever.
I've known him for a long time, and I rib him here and there. I don't really support his old man, but I like him. He's always been nice to me. He's a really good dude.
And by the way, imagine if people form their judgments on you based on Ronnie's antics.
Yeah, no kidding, for sure. Anybody in politics has that kind of an idea.
Now, here's the thing. He was interviewing your Nickelbacks, and I was watching and thinking, well, they seem like nice guys. It was just a reminder that sometimes in the court of public opinion, people get tried and convicted for reasons that are so out of their control. And I don't know if I'm getting softer as I get older, but I was thinking, that Chad Kroeger seems like a fun dude.
Yeah, I don't think they're not known for not being nice guys. I think everybody knows they're nice people, for sure. I think the only issue people have with them is just possibly the formulation style of their music, where it feels like it's kind of got a commercial market and they go for it. But that, to me, is... You can't really knock it. I mean, it's like you can't just go on every form of business just because you don't like the way that they go to their customer. I mean, they happen to go to that marketplace because that's the music that they like. So I'm not going to fault them for it whatsoever.
Doesn't they were mean talking I have about
to like it.
I they were talking about just having done.
Like sorry.
They were talking about just having done mean tweets on Jimmy Kimmel, and the tweet was something like, do you know that if you play a Nickelback record backwards, it sounds like the devil, but if you play it frontwards, it's worse. It sounds like Nickelback. Like, they seem to have a pretty good handle on having a sense of humor about themselves.
If you're going to do that kind of music, you still should understand that you're going to get that kind of flack. That's how it works. Like, that should be equally as understood as, I'm not going to rip on you as a person, but you do make this kind of music. It's not Pink Floyd 1968. Like it is for the masses, and it has a feeling that is light and for a certain aspect. Like it's commercial, and that there's a difference.
But billions of people can't be wrong, can they? They pack them in all over the world.
Yeah, but it's the billions of that type of fan of music. You know, it's not. When you listen to a record that even like someone like Jack White makes, it's just he's probably trying to make a song that he hears in his head a certain way, and trying to make it as honest and open as possible. Where I do believe that Nickelback has a feel when they go into the studio, they do things a certain way, and the songs have a kind of a box that they live in. And I definitely haven't been seen anything to think otherwise or hear, you know.
So would you rather play the O2 or Wembley in London to fans who wanted to ingest that kind of music, or would you rather play to 10 super music academics who really dug what you were doing?
Well, that's not, those are two different things. I think it's like I like to do the music that I'm trying to do, and I've done all kinds of different things. But, I mean, I think it's like sometimes you have to do things for like you said, if you've got a role in a show or an HBO show that was shot in New York with a bunch of cool people, as opposed to, you know, a show that's gonna be on CTV and you have a gun and you're pretending to be a cop. Like, there's a big difference, obviously. Right. You know, you would like to do certain things and certain things that are in your realm, but if you're deciding from the get-go that this is your vision and you're going closer to the cop and the, you know, blow 'em up style thing, that's a decision that you're making, and that's understood. So there will be some flack with that, but hey, you'll probably sell more TV shows or whatever else, you know.
I don't think I could play a cop with a gun.
You could play a teacher with a gun.
Yeah, I could do that.
Yes.
I'm anxious to do a role that's completely outside my repertoire and be challenged and scared. I think in you ways
could
do
with your longer hair, you could be a great like hockey coach in a TV.
Really? Show. Oh, okay.
Yeah. The passionate, loud, high-pitched coach that just loses it.
Yeah, I could be that guy. Maybe there's a Canadian comic named Luch Casimiri. He's one of my...
you know what?
Do you know if Luch? If you had a
French accent, I think we could write that and pitch it tomorrow.
Really?
If you were French, I would watch it.
It's called...
fight for it.
He shoots, he's pissed.
He's all angry.
Oh, do you remember Lance et Comte? What was it in English?
It's all
right. He shoots, he scores. That was it. Do you remember that show?
Just yelling at the players about how it's cold and it doesn't matter. It's minus dees.
It's minus dees. Luch Casimiri, who wrote for Test Pattern with Dan Gallagher, wanted to do a Mighty Ducks-style hockey movie for adolescent girls called... Between Periods.
Oh, yeah. I wonder Amazing. How it wasn't picked up, eh? Why didn't he change the title?
Because it's no, so good.
No, this is the best part.
But did you, when you played minor hockey, was there chicken wire around the clock?
What?
Oh. They put chicken wire around the clock so that pucks didn't take the clock out.
Yeah, of course. Definitely.
I always admired that guy. There should be a Canadian Heritage Minute about the poor bastard who had to put chicken wire around the clock.
Oh, man, we got to take a break and wrap it up here.
All right. Stand by. We'll be right back on TNT.
Tidy's calling you, Sturley.
And we're back.
MF, why don't call in? If I could shoot, Dwayne. But on the basketball, the puck, Dwayne. On a besoin de shooter, sir. But on the goalie, n'est pas là. Alors tu prends le puck au blue line. Bon, le ref peut pas voir. Rête-toi, cream cheese.
I'm monotone like that the whole time.
Marie Chantal, tu peux pas rester là, tu vois. Faut que tu lances les comptes de but là, toi.
Sounds like you just start having to listen to him and work. Sounds like those horrible work tapes from the 40s. Like that dictators used to play. And monotone
voice. Alors les filles, écoutez, si vous restez en blue line, tu peux pas aller prendre le puck là. Donc tu passes le puck, toi, avec ton Sherwood PMP.
Oh, Jacques Demers.
That's the name of the show.
Jacques, I wanna watch this. Puck.
Jacques et le puck. La prochaine semaine sur Jacques et le puck. Hey Colin, arrête-toi.
Vic Park.
I love the franglais so much.
Yeah.
French and English.
Oh man. Yeah.
You created like that show, bud.
Yeah.
And you could play the stick boy.
The guy who lives at the rink.
Jacques et le puck.
Oh, jeudi man. Soir à 19h30.
That was a good TNT this week, Jonathan.
Good talking with you, bud. It always is.
I feel greasy. Some greasy stuff.
Talk to you next week, bud. À la prochaine fois, toi.
Bonsoir.